Hey guys, Jason Agnew here, just letting you know that 100% of all of our proceeds for the month of April will be donated to the COVID-19 Community Relief Fund. So if you are listening to this, and I know there's thousands of you that are listening to this, if you got a couple extra bucks you ever thought about joining our Patreon, please do so this month. It's not going to us. The money's not going to us. It's going to people who need it. The CanadaHelps.org Community Relief Fund is going to benefit. They're going to double our donation. And I'm making that donation this week in order to make sure I get in for the doubling. So once again, patreon.com/SNMEradio. We got a lot of great stuff happening. We've got the Midweek Markout, where we're going to review the big show each week. That's Mark Andrada and I. We got All Elite Weekly, the trivia show. Best of the Late Shift is now happening at the end of the week as well. So lots of content there to get you through your physical and social distancing and self-isolation. Patreon.com/SNMEradio. Oh, and what I think a few of you don't realize is that this show, you also get this show extended. There's a half hour extra each week, and it's commercial free. So not only are you getting all our bonus content, this show is a lot longer. There's a lot more to it. I just snip it on down for the radio version. You guys are always getting the radio version. So by all means, sign up. And do up the Patreon, patreon.com/SNMEradio. It's going to a good cause this month. I mean, it goes to a good cause every month, which is us that put the show on. But this is going to a better cause, in all seriousness. COVID-19 Relief Fund. patreon.com/SNMEradio. Do it now.
And all of these neurologists, every specialist, every doctor I've seen has said the same thing, and it is this. You are cleared.
This is Sunday night's main event.
In clear violation of the law.
With Jason Agnew.
I have a microphone and I can be louder than each and every one of you.
On TSN Radio.
I'm not finished with you!
Well, it is official. In the COVID-19 Last Promoter Standing Contest, Vince has defeated Dana. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another quarantine edition of Sunday Night's Main Event, coming at you across Canada on TSN Radio and all over the world at SundayNightsMainEvent.com. My name is Jason Agnew, and once again, I'm in studio alone today, but I will have virtual company very shortly. After all, with the Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa feud ending on NXT, I had to invite on our own Blackheart and Johnny Gargano's number one fan, bartender Dave, to join me in the first hour to take a look back at all the empty arena events we watched this week. Raw, SmackDown, NXT, and the delight of Chris Jericho lighting up commentary on AEW. We'll also check in with Dave Meltzer to chat about all the news of the week, including the Revival being granted their releases immediately from WWE. And to cap things off, well, it's the big show. Yes, sir, Paul White joins me in hour two to chat about his new Netflix series, The Big Show Show, as well as his future in the WWE and what he thought of an empty arena WrestleMania that when I did the interview, I had no idea he was in attendance at. Great how things like that work out. All that and more this week on Sunday Night's Main Event. But first things first, let's get you updated with a very busy week in wrestling and MMA news.
And now, your wrestling roundup on Sunday Night's Main Event.
Well, you'd think with the coronavirus running rampant all over the world, there would be less news in the world of wrestling and MMA, much like other sports all being shut down and only trades being documented and talked about on the radio. Not the case in pro wrestling and MMA, though. To kick things off in what I think is a shocking turn of events, Vince McMahon has made the decision on Friday to return to live programming with Raw every Monday, NXT every Wednesday, and SmackDown every Friday. Now, originally, tapings were scheduled all weekend long this past weekend, but apparently Vince changed his mind and now has the intention of going as close to live as possible with all of the events emanating from the WWE Performance Center. WWE addressed the developments in a statement to ESPN on Saturday, which read, quote, "We believe it is now more important than ever to provide people with a diversion from these hard times. We are producing content on a closed set with only essential personnel in attendance, following appropriate guidelines while taking additional precautions to ensure the health and wellness of our performers and staff. As a brand that has been woven into the fabric of society, WWE and its superstars bring families together and deliver a sense of hope, determination, and perseverance." End quote. Wow. Speculation is that this had something to do with their TV deals, which only allowed for a certain amount of taped programs each year. However, you know, you'd think that with a pandemic going on in the world, absolutely no sports generating any sort of live content, that the network would just be happy with anything the WWE was offering up, even if they taped them a few weeks in advance, as to not risk the health and safety of their performers. Because that would be a lot less risk if you're going to do this. Bring them in once as opposed to each and every week. It's ridiculous. So as I was saying, I mean, the original plan for WWE was to tape 5 episodes of Raw, 5 episodes of SmackDown, and a few episodes of NXT this past weekend. But Vince just flat out changed his mind. Now, obviously, this puts the health of all the performers and crew in jeopardy far more than a one-off taping of 5 weeks of content. And with the unpredictability of lockdown regulations escalating, we'll see how long these guys can last. So with all of that in mind, yesterday, Saturday that is, Fightful.com first reported that a WWE on-screen talent, not identified, tested positive for COVID-19. And WWE subsequently released a statement addressing this, saying, quote, "A WWE employee has tested positive for COVID-19. We believe this matter is low risk to WWE talent and staff, as the individual and a roommate became symptomatic in the days following exposure to 2 people working in acute healthcare on the evening of March 26, after WWE's TV production on a closed set was already complete. The employee had no contact with anyone from WWE since being exposed to those 2 individuals, is doing well, and made a complete recovery." Oh, end quote. Okay, now, if you do the math on this, that means WWE waited the 14-day incubation period to actually release this statement, meaning they were 100% hiding this from the public during their recent television tapings. Well done, WWE. Shady as always. All right, over to crazy promoter number 2. Dana White finally had the hammer brought down on him this week. The governor of California, Gavin Newsom, went to Disney, the parent company of ESPN, saying he didn't want the next UFC show taking place in California. ESPN then told UFC not to run it. Now, as you may remember, this show was supposed to take place on native grounds, but the native grounds were located in California. So it took the governor going to Disney to shut down Dana. So with this, the California shows are canceled. Dana White then said he's still making plans for Fight Island, where all the fighters will be housed for 1 month prior to fights, and they will be starting up with regular shows as soon as possible. So this is Dana White buying a private island, flying in fighters, having them incubated for 1 month before fights, staying there afterwards, and having fights on this island. This is real. This is not a movie. To me, it just feels like the plot of a 1980s Jean-Claude Van Damme movie. I mean, let's all just go watch Bloodsport. I think it's up on Netflix. And let these fighters chill for 6 months till these things blow over. Not worth it. Just calm down. Okay, ping pong, back to McMahon, because that's what we're going to do here, because he did pivot and he calmed down, non-regards to wrestling, but Vince has given up on football. As on Friday, the XFL announced it was suspending operations and all employees have been laid off. An ESPN report also said that there are no plans to return for a 2021 season. To me, that just, this is like an out clause for Vince, and he can use the pandemic as a way to get out of the XFL. Because let's face it, it was a bad idea to begin with. Many years ago, it was a bad idea to begin with. Now it's an even worse idea. So Vince is, he's hit the escape hatch here. Back to the world of wrestling inside the ring. Well, I guess outside the ring here, but as I'm sure you've heard, The Revival have been released from their WWE contract. There's been talk of this for a very long time, and the pair finally got their wish. To answer your question, they do not have a 90-day no-compete clause. However, AEW is taped for the next 2 months, so don't expect any run-ins during the pandemic. Dash Wilder, real name Daniel Wheeler, has changed his name on Twitter to Cash Wheeler. Scott Dawson has done the same thing. His real name is Daniel Harwood. He's changed his name to Dax Harwood. So there you have it. Expect The Revival soon, but is it really a good idea in the midst of what the world is going through like now? Like, we've seen Brody Lee, we've seen Matt Hardy debut. Let's just wait till they can debut with actual fans in the stands. Hold them off for a while. Right now, the Bucks can't even get out of California, and obviously, that's the big program that people want to see right away due to those tweets that are resurfacing from years ago where they said, mark my words, this match will happen. I think one of the Bucks tweeted that out many months ago. Well, it will happen. It will happen. Let's just not have it happen right away. Not rush things. In Wednesday night ratings, NXT's average audience was 629,900 and AEW was 629,500. Yes, NXT came out on top by 400 viewers, pretty much a tie. And both of these numbers, in particular, AEW's, lower than the pre-pandemic ratings. WWE is going to be doing a cruiserweight title tournament. This after stripping Jordan Devlin of the title because he's unable to travel and defend it due to COVID-19. So it was announced yesterday that 8 wrestlers will be taking part in the interim cruiserweight title tournament. They'll be split into groups of 4 with everyone facing 3 other wrestlers in their group. The wrestler with the best record from Group A will advance to the face of the wrestler with the best record from Group B in the finals. Wow, feels like the G1, except on a much, much smaller scale. And I don't mean the size of the performers. Devlin has also tweeted out a note here after Regal made the announcement saying, first things first, absolutely shocking and disrespectful decision by @WWE management. Secondly, you can crown a fraud champion and give him a little replica of my title, but everyone around the world knows who the real NXT Cruiserweight champion still is. It's a smart move by Devlin because ultimately you'll get all these matches, especially to kill all the time during COVID-19, and then you'll get the eventual program where Devlin goes and gets his title from the winner of this tournament. To me, seems to make a lot of sense as far as the move goes by WWE. The MGM Grand in Las Vegas has canceled all their events through May 31st, which means AEW Double or Nothing will not be taking place there on Saturday, May 23rd. I do not believe AEW has commented on this as of yet. Impact Wrestling got into the world of empty arenas this week, and they taped a couple months of TV in Nashville. Much like WWE, it's unclear how the company is getting away with the tapings, as Tennessee also has a series of restrictions on any public gatherings. I think everywhere has that. And finally, in case you fast-forwarded through, which you probably did, during an advertisement on SmackDown on Friday, it was announced that the 25th year celebration of Triple H will happen for no reason in 2 weeks' time on April 24th on SmackDown. So get ready to fast forward through that as well. And it did say the celebration begins on SmackDown. I don't know if that means it's multiple nights. Honestly, like, let's, I don't even know. I don't know what WWE should do. I don't think that this is the answer, though. We shall take a break. We're going to come back. Bartender Dave will join me next. We'll dive into NXT first and chat about this Gargano and Ciampa match, which, oh boy, seemed like a hybrid of Taker and AJ and Edge and Orton. Just let's bring them all together and do it again. We'll do that when we return. You're listening to Sunday Night's Main Event. We thank you for doing so on TSN Radio.
I'm in the corner, watching you kiss her. Hello, Gordy Levesque here. No one swings and hacks like I do. And no one struts quite like I do, too. And no one brews beer like Great Lakes do. Canuck Pale Ale. My beer, your beer. Our beer. Available in over 400 LCBO and grocery store across Ontario for only $2.80. Great Lakes Brewery. Brewed for you, Ontario.
All right, guys. Right on time. Starts in this ring. It ends in this ring. Just here to decide the winner.
I tried so hard and got so far.
Well, yes, it is finally over. Johnny Gargano, Tommaso Ciampa having their never-ending match on NXT this week. Welcome back. You're listening to Sunday Night's Main Event. My name is Jason Agnew, self-isolating in studio. But of course, as I said, I would be joined by the man who is the first member. I believe he started the Johnny Gargano fan club. Bartender Dave, how are you?
I don't know about that, but
what?
I'm doing fine. Happy Easter, Brother Jason.
Yeah.
And I hope that all of you out there in Radioland are enjoying your Easter chocolates, staying safe, staying healthy, and most importantly, staying at home and doing your best not to speak moistly.
That's funny. That's a huge joke for us here in Canada, but I don't know how much that has made it outside of Canada. Our Prime Minister caught himself at some point. I don't know if it was written for him, Dave, or if he accidentally said it. He said, like, he was describing how to use a mask and why we're using a mask, and he said, you know, make sure when you're using it, it helps us avoid speaking moistly on one another. And he immediately caught himself.
Yeah.
It was, honestly, it was so humanizing to the Prime Minister, who has been all Prime Ministers everywhere and presidents have been doing so many speeches. There's daily updates from our provincial leaders, from our municipal leaders, and from our Prime Minister. And it was just so humanizing to see him do it. I enjoyed him making this mistake and just catching himself right away.
Yeah, I like that too. And he said right after it, he's like, that was a horrible image or something.
Yeah, something like that. It was really funny. It was really funny. And people wearing, are you wearing a mask? Do you wear the mask when you go out?
No, I don't.
Do you just not go out?
Not very often.
Yeah.
I go out once a week to do groceries.
That's about it, right?
Or to go pick up my kids from my ex-wife's house. That's about it. And we don't really see anybody. It's very lonely.
It is lonely. It is very strange. I mean, I the fact that I still get to go into a studio, which I think I'm the only host at News Talk that still comes in, at least weekday host, because now I'm doing the overnight show as well. But
yeah.
It is a relief to get out of the house, even though I do so, at least, like leaving my house at 10. There's nobody out there. You know
yeah.
Last week, when I walked out of the studio after broadcasting WrestleMania on Saturday night, it was so eye-opening. Saturday night, you know, our studios are in downtown Toronto on Richmond.
Right in the entertainment.
Right in the club district. You're right. And I saw one person that was a block away from me.
Oh my gosh.
And that was WrestleMania. I was out of here at midnight on a Saturday or one on a Saturday. It was crazy. But
yeah, that never happens on a WrestleMania night either, right?
So listen, I wanted to have you on this week because you haven't had your say about WrestleMania. And listen, we'll get into Gargano and Ciampa. I know it's a week old, but you were unable to join us on Tuesday with Mark. But what did you think of the WrestleManias this year? Two nights, first of all, did you like the experience of two nights?
I liked it a lot better because it gave you some, well, now this might be a bit biased because we've got like the self-quarantine and everything going on. So it was kind of nice to have a 2-day break where you didn't have to think of anything.
Right.
Well, all you had to do was watch wrestling. And the shows were, the whole weekend was maybe a two-match event, I'd say. Like the Taker match and then the Funhouse match. Thrown in, there was a couple of good matches here and there, but overall, it was enjoyable, I guess. I loved the Firefly Funhouse, though.
You were texting me. We were texting back and forth about that, and it doesn't surprise me because Mouth hated it, and I feel as though you guys just live on opposite sides of the wrestling world now.
Oh, we'll keep it that way. I'm fine with that.
Self-isolation works well for the two of you.
Hey, I'm a Gen Xer. I knew how to self-isolate way before this happened.
But listen, you know what? You actually, later in the week, you had a great tweet at bartenderdave74. So we've talked about it on the show that your sons used to be very big wrestling fans. It was 1 year ago you took them to WrestleMania and you burnt them out. They don't watch wrestling anymore, but you tried to show them the Firefly Funhouse match that you loved. And what happened?
Halfway through it, Hollis just looked at me. Hollis is my youngest. He looked at me. He's like, "When's the match going to start, Daddy?" And I'm just like, "It has started. Isn't this great?" And he's like, "This is crap."
Uh-huh. He wasn't the only one. What did you think about that? Because the big criticism of that match is it was not a match. It was a weird David Lynch, crazy trip. I enjoyed it for that fact because I already watched a whole bunch of matches. But I think much like the criticism that Undertaker and Cena got a few years ago at WrestleMania, where they really didn't do much of a match, there was the criticism for this Cena appearance with you know, it was just, it ended with a finishing move and there was nothing else to it.
But it was fun. I thought it was so much fun. And I think that the people that are saying, "Oh, well, it wasn't a wrestling match." Yeah, sure. It wasn't a wrestling match, but it was entertaining. It took you back throughout his whole career. It rekindled all kinds of memories. And I loved everything about it. I thought it was really fun. And even watching it back a second time, I liked it even more because you get the little things that you haven't, that you missed the first time. And I really, really enjoyed it.
I like the fact that it did make people do the deep dive on what everything meant and all the references in there. I thought it was fun for that aspect of it. And, you know, it's much like watching any sort of, you know, Marvel or DC. You're falling into a fantasy universe. You're trying to dig behind the scenes. You're trying to find out what happens next. And even like something like The Masked Singer. I know I keep bringing this up, but, you know, you do the deep dive on all the clues that they give you in these packages. And I think that's what this felt like, where people were, it was definitely a lean forward instead of a lean back medium, as in you're not just sitting back and watching. You're actually involved and intrigued by it. And I thought that was a huge separation from a lot of the other things on the card, including Edge versus Randy Orton, which that same night was a hugely hyped match with, we've talked about it, a great program going in. But what was your take on that match?
I enjoyed it. I thought it told a really nice story. The ending I thought was beautiful. A lot of people are criticizing that it took way too long and that it was over 30 minutes, correct?
36.
Yeah, there you go. And that is a long match, but I thought it warranted it, and I thought they did a good job start to finish. I enjoyed it, and I know a lot of people did not like it, but I've always been a huge Edge fan, and I thought that they did a really good job of placing him with Randy Orton, somebody that knows him really well, can keep him safe and everything like that. And I know that, like, I went through that whole 24 episode with Edge, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I heard it's very good. I haven't seen it yet, but that is definitely a binge or a worthwhile watch for you isolating at home.
It was so good, like an hour and a half, and it felt like it was 20 minutes. It was so well done, and it gave me hope. I'm like, hey, he's 46, I'm 45. I could look that good next year. Well, maybe not, but
I mean, no. But we all have dreams, Dave. We all have dreams. So, you know, if you enjoyed that match, and did you enjoy Taker and AJ as well?
Yeah, I did. I thought it was well done. It was good. I don't really know how to explain it. Like, it was...
I liked good. It as well. It was good. And I think that everyone kind of agreed that that was a good way to make Taker look good. And the reason why I brought that up is not because I wanted to talk about that. We've gone over it a lot. But more so, getting back to NXT and what we're going to lead with here is Gargano and Ciampa. Now, this match had elements of both the pre-taped Undertaker AJ thing, and then it was the brawl, essentially the same type of brawl that we had with Edge and Orton. And I'm curious if that was great because you had the hybrid of the two, or was it too much and too close? What did you take out of it?
I thought, okay, so yes, it was close to that that brawl that that Edge and Orton had, but they did it in a way that kind of like mimicked the whole meta feeling, or the, you know, the darkness, and I love the lighting and how it started off with Triple H in the corner, and I really enjoyed it. I think I liked Edge and Orton a bit better, but I thought they worked really well. The ending, I really liked the ending with Candice low blow and Johnny and then coming back in. I thought that was really well done. I didn't see that coming.
All right. Well, I hate everything you just said. I hated this. I thought it was far too long. I thought that Johnny not ending the match on his own and Candice coming in, it was silly. It makes it seem like he didn't put an end to this. His wife did. Again, far too long. Had the cinematic value of AJ and Undertaker, had yeah. none of the sound effects and none of the music, which means it bored me like Edge and Orton did, and it was incredibly long. I thought that, and I didn't want to see these guys go at it again in the first place, so they had that working against yeah. them. I despise this. It was a waste of my time, and I'm surprised that NXT managed to score a higher rating than AEW by putting this on. I did not like this whatsoever, Dave.
How about you tell us what you really think?
I don't hold back, Dave. I don't hold back. Okay, but I liked
the Candice thing because I thought that it really cemented Johnny as a heel. And Johnny's been a babyface for so long. And I think that helped in making him look like the smarmy little heel that can't do it on his own. And I like the little addition of that.
So if he's the heel, though, because what we did see coming out of this is the car with Scarlett Bordeaux and Killer Cross waiting. And it's like if they're plotting against Gargano and Candice, is Killer Cross the babyface? Because that's hard to believe.
Yeah, especially with a name like that. Is he coming in with that name?
I don't know what he's coming in with. We don't know that as of yet. They could very well change it. Probably if they want to own it. We'll see. But regardless, I mean, those two as a pairing to me are definitely a heel pairing. Killer Cross is not a likable guy. You know,
Not the least bit. I've seen him live. He's not.
There you go. I mean, and I'm not saying that in a bad way. I mean, that's a good character to not be likable if he's going to be a force to come in. Plus, look at the size difference involved. Killer Cross is a big dude. Johnny Gargano is a tiny guy. So I would say, I mean, it would be better for Cross to come in and go against Ciampa here because Ciampa's the baby face with the broken down body who just lost. And Cross coming in now to take him out, to me, would seem like a bully move. And I think that should be the pairing. I'm just surprised that he took a good look at Johnny Gargano and Candice LeRae as they were walking away.
Yeah, but he probably did that too because like he saw that Johnny won that. And so Johnny's number one in his eyes because he wants to go after the winner, not the loser, to cement himself as the next big star. And I think that's, and maybe this is Johnny starting a turn back to face and he just rekindles the whole Big Show thing of flip-flopping face to heel.
Yeah, there definitely is that appropriate enough with Big Show on the show this week. But yes, he could very well do that. Okay, so also on this show, the women's ladder match happened. To me, much like what happened at WrestleMania with the three-way ladder match for the tag titles, which we don't have to get into. We'll get into that next because they're going to do something stupid again on SmackDown. The women's ladder match, it's hard to watch this type of match with no reactions to stunts that they're doing when they take forever to climb a ladder. In particular, to me, there was a spot where Robert Stone climbed the ladder with Chelsea Green, and it's like they just forgot how to climb, and it really sucked. Io Shirai coming out of this to start a feud with Charlotte Flair, ultimately I enjoy, but I don't know if it's just the fact that a ladder match with no one doesn't work, or maybe you don't do a ladder match here because, again, it doesn't work with no people. What did you take out of this?
Well, I don't know if it doesn't work. I just feel that it takes away when you don't have the pop of the crowd when they do all the big moves. And it's more of like, I said this before when we did the round table, without the crowd, they can't do the cut to the crowds. And so you're focusing on the match completely. So you see all the spots that they miss, the blown spots and everything like that. And it kind of takes away from that as well, I find.
Yeah, I agree. Do you like Io Shirai coming out of this to be the opponent?
Without a doubt.
Yeah, you like that?
Like, no one else should have. Like she's ready. She's ready. She's fantastic. I really enjoy watching her.
Well, they should have some stellar matches. Again, tough though with no audience, but that is what they shall do. And hopefully, you got to figure that Charlotte Flair did deliver with Rhea Ripley. Ripley now out of the game for a little while due to immigration, I think. But we'll talk to Meltzer about that a little bit later. Ripley due to immigration. Yeah.
Well, that's a big thing right now too, because like even with, what's his name?
Jordan Devlin.
Yeah. He's, and what's going on with Finn now? Like why is he UK NXT only? Or cause I got confused by that whole spot that they did.
There is I don't know if he's UK exclusive. Like right now, if you know, everyone is restricted in the country that they're in.
Right.
I don't know where Finn is right now, but if he's over in the UK, like they postponed UK tapings anyway. So you're just dealing with NXT, and if Finn can't get there from here, then he's off TV for a while. And I think that's what we've seen with Jordan Devlin and why we're getting a tournament, some sort of tournament for the lightweight title.
And this, okay, Cruiser. So now, not to go off a topic, but this is the thing that I'm having a problem with right now watching wrestling, is that if they had just put a stop to this for a while, like just taking a break, taking an isolation from wrestling, and like I understand that they have network commitments and they have to do live tapings and everything like that, but it just feels like it feels like they've got this revolving door of the only people that are allowed to wrestle. So you get these 35, 40-minute matches of just, like, crap.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was very evident on Monday night, where to me it felt like a 3-hour episode of Superstars on Monday night.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was tough to watch. All right, here's the deal. We haven't even got into NXT's opponent. We're going to do that next, though. We're going to touch on AEW as we have to take a break. So we will do that and come on back. Bartender Dave joining me from isolation. I'm Jason Agnew. You're listening to Sunday Night's Main Event on TSN Radio.
One is the loneliest number that you'll ever do.
Bartender Dave here to let all of my bearded brethren know that we are bringing the High Street Beard Care products to North America. From the darkest reaches of South Africa comes the finest beard oils and grooming products known to man. The highstreetbeardoil.ca. To us, beards are not a trend. They are a way of life. We have 4 beard oil flavors, spicy, woody, citrus, and earthy. A revolutionary beard jelly that'll leave your beard silky smooth and ridiculously attractive. Beard fertilizers that'll help you grow the biggest and most beautiful beard you can imagine. Also beard paste, beard butter, and stash wax. All available at thehighstreetbeardoil.ca. Join us on the high street and spoil your mane.
She might have a broken nose here, Tony.
Wow, look at her.
That's bleeding like a faucet.
And,
look at this.
And she...
What has she got there? Oh, she put... Oh, I love it.
Oh, she said...
She put on a glove.
Give me a glove so I can reach
Fits
you.
Like a glove. No! Wow. Oh, my gosh. Kick to that possibly broken nose.
Oh, my God. What a match.
Welcome back. It is Sunday night's main event. Jason Agnew here, isolated in studio. Bartender Dave joining me from his home. And Dave, we've talked about NXT, and NXT actually won the ratings by like 400 people on average against AEW. And I got to say, that shocked me, because AEW on Jericho's commentary alone was the best show of the week.
Yeah, he was fantastic. Well, anything that this guy does is great. And now, being in isolation, I've been watching a lot of movies too. Now, have you seen the Jay and Silent Bob reboot?
No, I haven't. He does have a part in that. That's right. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, he plays the clan leader in it. It's amazing.
Oh my God.
He does it so well.
That's funny. I really thought, like, so I actually watched this when I was working the overnight, and I had some tape programming on, and I put Jericho on. And let's be honest, like, normally I'll fast forward through a lot because there's so much to watch and really try to get the key aspects of the matches and be able to recap, be able to digest. With this, I just left it on, and there were so many times where I started to maybe giggle a bit, to laugh, and to consciously think, oh man, he's getting that person over by saying this. It was a definite color commentary, 80s, 90s style, and I just can't believe how everything that Jericho does, he thinks about beforehand and does excellently.
Yeah, he's definitely like a professional in every way too. Like you said it perfectly. Like he really focuses on what he needs to do, and he goes and he gets it. Like he's a driven performer. I love everything that he does.
Now this thing started with Jake Roberts doing his promo. To me, this is a good way to keep Jake on TV. I would guess he's not allowed to be in the arena due to the fact that he's, you know, a little bit older. Jake's been tweeting out that he's been in a hotel room in self-isolation, what seems to be forever. Jake's a great character here. Then he is still the manager of Lance Archer, a.k.a. the Murder Hawk Monster. Why? I mean, Lance Archer is a great character, and I think he's awesome. And Murder Hawk, I'm even okay with that. Adding Monster and just feels so WWE cliche.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. It's like Murder Hawk, fine, whatever. I don't know if I'm okay with using murder in any name.
I think it's
a bit too abrasive, but that's just me. I don't know, being a father or whatnot. But Murder Hawk, fine. Murder Hawk Monster, no, that's just it's cheesy and cliche, and like, I'm sorry, Lance Archer is a good enough name too, but I guess they're looking for something a bit more menacing than that. You know, Lance, I think of, like, I don't know, like a skateboarder or something like that.
Lance Bass, Lance Cade, for
yeah,
Lance,
right, yeah.
But you know, I think they're also looking for something to market with, right? And he's so just his mohawk's so distinctive, so Murder Hawk is fine with me.
And he got rid of that tramp stamp. Did you notice that? Remember,
no.
I brought that up a few weeks ago. And if you look on his back, he's got more work done that's covered it now.
Oh, I didn't notice that. Well, maybe you took note. There you go.
Not that I stare at his backside.
Yeah, anyway. You do. I foresee, Dave, this whole tournament, and I mean, first of all, what are your thoughts on doing a tournament in this time? I think it's a smart way to kill TV time.
Yeah, exactly. Because you do have a tournament. It's like doing like the King of the Ring. It takes a long time. And especially if you break up the brackets show to show to show, it gives you something to go on. And if it's a tournament, people are going to be trying harder in the matches, so they're going to last longer. It makes total sense.
And we saw the first match being Cody versus Sean Spears. I actually think, I mean, it's fine to have Sean Spears here and do the rematch. Sean Spears, to me, seems to have more value taunting people from ringside and gambling. Yeah. I mean, I really like what he does there, and he gets in the ring, and I kind of disconnect with him.
Yeah, I don't find him really believable, and I don't know how to explain it other than that. It's just, like, he's great, he's got a good character, he knows how to use the mic and everything, but when he gets in the ring, it's just very Magoo, very bland, you know?
The TNA Championship, TNT, not TNA. Oh, sorry, guys. TNT Championship Tournament, I think, must culminate with Cody versus the Murder Hawk Monster. Has to be the destination here, don't you think?
Yeah, I would agree with that, because you've got that. And I could see Lance Archer going over. And
oh,
Cody,
I agree.
Sure. And it's a great way to launch this new character. He's got Jake. He's got the look. He's got the mohawk and everything. So why not push him? He's great. He's really nice and big. And he's like the Braun Strowman of AEW.
No, just doing a better don't job. Smash him down. Keep him.
Well, no, I said doing a better job.
Okay. Okay. Hey, you know what? I believe you and I and everyone on this show has hugely criticized Britt Baker for her in-ring work. Her promos have come around. Britt Baker faced Hikaru Shida. Hikaru Shida, again, not on my roster of people that I enjoy all that much. The whole women's division, I'm not a huge fan of here.
Me too.
The best women's match we've seen in AEW, in my opinion, was this Britt Baker-Hikaru Shida match. Very much helped along by Britt being accidentally busted open.
That was
and
great.
Playing it up huge. I thought this was great. And Jericho added to it. It seemed to be just the perfect storm of everything happening here. And what do they call it? Fortunate color or whatever it is when you get busted open and it works towards your match and helps it. And that is what I saw we got from Britt here.
Yeah, for sure. And it's you know, maybe Britt just hasn't found that opponent that she clicks with, because she really did in this one. And I don't know, I don't want to give Shida or Baker any props on them being, I think it might've been just a combination of the two together, because they really worked well. The bloody, like her getting bloody looked great. And the fact that she played it up, that she really enjoyed it. And like, it was great. And like, yeah, she lost, but it was still really fun to watch.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty tremendous. Now, it looks like, I guess you push Hikaru Shida fourth then to Nyla Rose. I mean, that's not something that really interests me, but it's kind of hard to get a Nyla Rose match that is going to interest me all that much, since I don't really dig what she does in the ring, nor the character. And honestly, though, I also don't think it's time for her to lose. I think that she should be the monster that destroys people for a while. So maybe Shida's just being fed.
Oh, yeah, I totally get that, too. Like, I got that feeling. Nyla Rose, you're going to have to beat her with somebody that really connects with the crowd. So there's no crowd to connect with. But you know what I mean?
Yes,
like, there's got to
yes.
be somebody bigger than just Hikaru Shida, if I'm saying that right. So, like, who's that going to be? I think this is going to go for a while with Nyla just destroying everybody.
Yeah, and I think as it should, that makes sense. All right, final thing to touch on here. Okay, two things, actually. First of all, you know, we've mentioned a whole bunch of good things that happened. I think another good thing will be Matt Hardy challenging Jericho to the Elite Deletion. Once again, you know, we say Jericho does everything very well. I've said this from the beginning when Hardy shows up. Jericho, in a filmed vignette, walking into whatever Matt is doing and bringing that next level of questioning what Matt is doing, you know what I mean? Of like just critiquing exactly what he's involved in, but also buying into it at the same time. I think this has the potential to be, dare I say, wonderful.
Yes, I agree with you. Like, and I wasn't too sure about the Matt Hardy character coming in at such a high level with Jericho, but the two are going to work so good. And what really sealed the deal was, I believe it was 2 weeks ago, with Jericho had the interaction with Vanguard One when he was in
in the pool.
The jacuzzi or the pool.
So good.
I thought that was fantastic. Like, I was just like, oh, I'm excited for this now. Oh, yeah. All right. Well done, AEW.
And I think that that's an indication of what's to come when they do have the Elite Deletion, whenever that plays out. It's also a time where, you know, Matt Hardy is pretty busted up, and putting Matt Hardy in that Undertaker AJ style match, doing a deletion style match where it's all, you know, there's a heavy post-production on it, I think benefits him at this point in his career.
Completely. Yeah, he's had a rough go of it. And I think that, we even talked about the possibility of Taker and Sting now with
these
kind of matches.
Yes. but we'll leave that alone for this week. I want you to now explain to me, Dave, why I'm watching Kenny Omega in a match with the best friends and Michael Nakazawa putting baby oil on himself. Why is Kenny Omega in this?
Because they don't know what to do with him.
He's supposed to be one of the...
That's the only reason I can think of, because like you've got this guy that has all the buzz. He was supposed to be the face of the company. He was going to come in and change everything and blah, 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 blah. And now he's doing this, which I do not understand in the least bit.
Yeah, I think this is really garbage for Omega. And he, after someone, you're right. I mean, face of the company, there was debate whether who should be that first champion. And, you know, a lot of people wanted that to be Omega, especially coming in with the documentary made about him for us here in Canada, and how the mighty have fallen, Kenny Omega. My goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Final note for AEW, Jack Swagger and Jon Moxley. I don't know if I'm looking forward to the match all that much. I feel as though the revelation kicking in might be these are two WWE guys. However, this vignette, and in particular, Jack Swagger's wife is a phenomenal heel. We're winners in this family. You train, you win, or you don't come home. Amazing.
Yeah, I used that on the kids a couple of times this week already.
But so good. I mean, I don't know what this... I've heard from all indications and reports that this match is very good, but I don't have full confidence in it. It is kind of funny that they're promoting an empty arena match, making it a novelty.
I think that's just like taking a shot at the whole thing. That like it's like, yeah, of course, they're all empty arena matches. But I think it's more like just a false count anywhere. I think that's what they're meaning, right?
I guess. I mean, we'll see, because there'll be a great comparison. You know, who's going to deliver here? We just spent last block spending a lot of time talking about Ciampa and Gargano.
Mm-hmm.
Or Edge and Orton, for that matter. And can Swagger and Moxley deliver over top of those two? I think those three will be compared. To me, not a high bar was set. To you, though, you did like at least Edge and Orton, which you are in the minority for that one.
Yeah, I know. But that's, you know, my rebel upbringing, I guess.
All right.
This one I don't know about, though, the Jack Swagger and Jon Moxley, because I'm not a fan of either of them. So is this on next week, or have they announced when it is?
Yeah, this week we get Swagger versus Moxley in the empty arena match. So we'll see. Obviously, it's not Swagger, Hager, sorry about that. But obviously, there will be no title change here. That's ridiculous. So you kind of, and that it's actually might work against them, knowing that, you know, Moxley is definitely coming out on top.
Yeah, there's no way that they're going to give Jack Swagger the championship. Well, there's no, I don't know if you can say there's no way.
There's no way. I will say there's no way. There's no way. Absolutely not. 100% no way that title is finding itself around the waist of Jake Hager. Not a chance. We need to take another break. We shall come back. Let's talk WWE. Let's talk SmackDown. Dave, believe it or not, I have some positive words to say about SmackDown.
What?
Yes, it's going to happen, and we'll do it next right here. Sunday night's main event on TSN Radio. News Talk listeners, Jason Agnew here. You may know me as the host of Sunday Morning Trivia, but now I'm also jumping in to keep you company overnights on The Late Shift. It's not a trivia show because I don't have all the answers to what we're going through, but I'm here to chat, listen, and maybe even provide a laugh or two. Join me live weeknights from midnight to 4 a.m. on The Late Shift. Don't you dare miss it. Unless you're sleeping, because it is very late.
As one circle closes, another begins again. Since I brought you into this world, I'm gonna have to take you out.
Bye!
Hey. Wait. We're really glad before you go, you're our friend, and this is a friendship that'll never ever. I just want you to know, Bray, that anytime you want, I'm ready. To let you in.
Let me in. Wee-oo.
SmackDown aired on Fox this week and actually was taped as near to live as possible, which is pure insanity. But we'll talk to Dave Meltzer about that in the next segment. David, yes. I aired right there. So a clip of Braun and The Fiend, which seems to be the next direction. Listen, I was incredibly bored through pretty much all of SmackDown, and then this hit, and it was one of those moments where I looked up from my computer and put down my phone and went, wow, everything here makes complete sense. And my favorite part was when Bray was interrupted at the end and Braun sold nothing.
Yeah.
And Bray was mad about it. I loved it.
Yeah, okay. I'll give it. And they've got the history together,
yes,
too. So it makes total sense that they're doing this. But I don't buy Bray standing a chance in this feud. Is that wrong?
Huh. It's interesting. I don't quite know because, you know, Braun is not the plan. You know, him having the title is a pivot that they had to make because Roman Reigns has to stay home and they didn't want to pay Goldberg anymore. So I don't know what they do now. If they put the title back on The Fiend, that is. But for this feud, like, this to me is the best direction to go. And they've played it out. The history is there. That's excellent. Yep. Along with that, my favorite thing is I keep hearkening back to how garbage the build with Seth Rollins was back in the day where he was scared. And Braun just no-sells this. I'm ready to let you in. And then the look on Bray's face of being mad at this was so good.
It makes sense. You don't want a cowering heel like Rollins was. You don't want somebody crying in the corner. You want somebody to be angry, and like, he has that history, so he knows all of his games. He was part of the family, so it makes total sense that he wouldn't be scared, because he's like, I lived with you, I know you, I traveled with you, let's go.
And if you look at the difference between the reason why I'm saying it's the right program, because when Nakamura came out, oh man, and maybe it was just the comparison to, do I have to watch this garbage again? Nakamura is just a shell of what he used to be. Braun and Nakamura does nothing for me. We've already seen this for the Intercontinental title. Get me out of this. And now I think because of the history as well, and because of the precedent that was set with the Fiend and John Cena piece, I'm open to seeing a history lesson coming out of Bray's mind done with Braun Strowman.
Do you think they're going to do that like they did with John Cena? That would be really cool.
Why not? You have the history right there. And that's the story that they told with John, too. They told his career history, but along with that, it was based on the fact that Bray related it back to that WrestleMania match. So give me more of that. In this time of matches in an empty arena not delivering to the level that normal matches would, and the repetitive nature of WWE, hey, give me something different. Take a chance here. And these two in the ring would be garbage anyway.
Oh, for sure. For sure. All I want is Bray to come out with a black sheep's mask for him or something like that. Like, just something to harken back. It'll be good. If they do this, I can't wait. I'm really, really excited about it.
Along with that, we had some really, really terrible stuff on SmackDown. Like, the dirt sheet, the good news bit was horrible. They are going back to, this just boggled my mind. Listen, we got the positive out of the way. So the negative is now. Next week, we get the other three guys doing another match for the tag team championships. World is this?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. But getting back to the actual dirt sheet segment, like, that was all types of bad. Like, except for the Usos. The Usos can do no wrong in my mind. I love them. I think they're great. They're great characters. But, like, this whole, you know, doing the rap and
brutal
bit and everything. It's like, it would be like me trying to make cool TikTok videos for my kids or something like that. It's like these old guys trying to be hip and cool. It's just so bad. It's so cringy. I just can't. Oh, I couldn't even watch it. I had to fast forward until the Usos came in. It was just so bad. And, like, to have this again with the other three guys having a match, like, why? Why not have tag matches? I don't know.
The Miz and Morrison they want to be everything Sammy Guevara is. Because Sammy Guevara is the young kid who's cool and is doing the fun things with the signs and, you know, using his phone for all the videos. Like, that's a great character for him. Spanish God, blah, blah, blah. I love it. And Miz and Morrison, like, one of them's a dad and has a whole goddamn reality show about being a dad.
Yeah, exactly. Why? It's not believable. It's not funny. It's not entertaining. It's just, like, I want to hide my head in the sand. It's so bad.
For the Carmella and Dana Brooke vignette, I just want to ask you this because I didn't understand. So Carmella and Dana Brooke ask for a tag team championship shot against Nikki and Alexa backstage. Then when Nikki and Alexa turn away, Nikki actually says, pew, 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 tag team champions. I think we can do this. Did she think she was not mic'd? And was doing this to fill time? Like, did she not, or was that supposed to be said? Because I was very confused.
I think it might have been. No. Okay. So how close to live was this done? Like, why wasn't that edited out? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
I don't know. I'm also wondering whether that's supposed to be Nikki's wacky character.
No. Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. I don't have an answer. But then, you know, you have this lined up and they're supposed to get a tag shot. But later in the show, we see that Naomi versus Dana Brooke is going to be a match next week. I think it's a qualifying match for Money in the Bank.
So she's got to work twice.
I don't know. I guess one of those matches isn't next week. To me, they screwed this up and they put her on for two things. Listen, the last thing this program needs is two Dana Brooke empty arena matches.
Yeah, good point. I didn't even know that these two were a potential tag team.
I guess so. They were both standing beside one another, so that's qualifications enough to be a tag.
Yeah, is this just like, these are the ones that are cleared to wrestle for us, so we're going to use them as much as possible?
That's what has to happen here. That's a situation we're in. Along with that, we see Bayley cut another promo with Sasha at her side. No one can touch them. Tamina comes out. Much like we saw Big Show on Monday, we saw Nakamura at the beginning of this. It's a program that doesn't matter with Tamina. It's there to basically be a holdover. I did really enjoy Sasha saying, "You came back from whatever coconut shell you've been hiding in." I laughed out loud and thought that was pretty clever. And that was the only thing clever about this. I think this has to be leading to Sasha winning Money in the Bank and challenging Bayley. I like that scenario.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, for sure. And it's a great culmination of this whole teaming that they've had in this back and forth and, oh, are you going to hit me? That kind of stuff. Like, it's great. And it's a good way. And then it'll just, like, Sasha with the briefcase is going to be gold, I think.
Yeah, the only thing that I don't like about it is, in order to do this flip, and I think I mentioned this last week, Bayley's trying to play the heel. This will flip Sasha to be the babyface. Sasha's not a babyface. That woman completely plays towards being a witch with a B like nobody's business.
Yeah, well put, well put.
I'm on the radio right now. I can't say those things that I want to say, but I mean, she plays out. And listen, she'd be damn good at it.
Yeah.
You know, best personalities are extensions of one's, you know, Best characters are extensions of one's personality, and that's the vibe I'm getting here. So why not let her run with it? But right now, they're forcing Bayley into this heel character. This feud is going to happen, and it's going to happen backwards.
Mm, yeah, but okay, so if she wins the Money in the Bank, she can hold it for a year, right? So yeah, they can keep it going and then have Bayley finally revert back to her happy-go-lucky babyface character.
I don't know if that works anymore either. I don't know what works for Bayley.
Exactly.
let's flip back to Raw before we take a break here. And Big Show showed up after WrestleMania was done to challenge Drew, who said no, and then he slapped. Listen, I would have loved... There was a reason why they refused to book Big Show with me on Tuesday and made sure that I did this interview on Monday before this happened, because I would have pelted him with questions about how ludicrous this entire segment was. Honestly, though, Dave, when it was happening, I had a huge fear of Big Show winning.
Oh, seriously? I didn't see that coming at all.
I thought maybe because they were they have a thing with stop and starting, and Drew did not get the big celebration because obviously it was in front of no one. And I actually had a fear of Big Show winning the title, because just hold it with Big Show for a while and let these two go back and forth. I mean, I'm happy they didn't, and I'm guessing that was a one-off for Big Show because he does live in Florida anyway, and they drove him over him and had him do that. But this was just the weirdest segment, and for no real reason they did this.
Yeah, completely no real reason. Like, and why would you even have it, this just happened after WrestleMania? Why wouldn't you just put it as the main event for the Raw after Mania instead?
Yeah.
Like, I know that it was in the main, like in that spot, but no one was there to see it. So why would you even do that? Oh, this just happened after WrestleMania. And like, this was like, I'm sorry, this was such a crappy Raw. Like,
oh,
such
my
a crappy
goodness.
Raw. Like a Raw that I always look forward to.
Yes.
You know, after Mania. I couldn't wait. Awesome. And then this, like, really? Just, I couldn't believe it. Like, and I like it that the hard cam now hides the empty seats with it facing the entranceway and everything. But there was nothing to this show. What did we get? What was the big thing that we got?
That was it. We just talked about it. We got the solidification of Bianca Belair to Street Profits Act, but we saw that the night before anyway. So there's your debut. I mean, the other debut this week is the Forgotten Sons are up on SmackDown.
And Nia Jax came back. Whoop-de-doo.
Man, I just have no interest. Like, stay away.
Yeah, exactly.
There's nothing. She does nothing for me. This, to me, was a three-hour show, and it was superstars. I mean, they did 3 weeks of one program in one night. Street Profits versus Theory and Garza, which leads into Zelina versus Bianca, which leads into the Street Profits and Bianca versus Theory, Garza, and Zelina. It was 35 minutes of television time, and it was 3 weeks, basically all of those 3 weeks smashed into 1 week. And then, did you know Aleister Black and Apollo Crews took 32 minutes of television time?
Oh, my God.
I forgot Apollo Crews existed.
Yeah, I know. And he was the other thing. He came over from SmackDown, too. So we got that as well.
Oh, is that a thing? I don't know where these people are. What do you do with Drew McIntyre next? Who's his next program? I think it's one of two names. I mean, I think it's a babyface program with Kevin Owens or it's Seth Rollins. Those are the two that are free. Both of them have definitely separated. I will give them credit for Kevin Owens is definitely going his own direction, but they have not really alluded to where he is going. And Seth came out and faced Denzel Dejournette and squashed him. So those two seem to be freed up. I would assume one of the two, probably Seth, is against Drew, but that doesn't excite me.
No, not at all. And like, it's too early, I think, to put Seth back into the main event, or not the main event picture, but you know, the title picture. And if you put him with Owens, then you've got that odd dynamic of babyface. Yeah, you're probably right. Seth is probably the only real contender that's could take seriously, at least.
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll go with the chosen one versus the Messiah.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, you could do that, and you could build up to it by having like Buddy Murphy, or sorry, Murphy, and then Akam and Rezar trying like that.
Well, one of Akam and Rezar is hurt, so he's not around. But you get it's the other one this time. I can't remember which is which. Much like the new tag team that is on NXT, where I'm not sure which is which. One is bigger than the other one. Anyhow, David, that wraps us up for this week. The second hour has got a whole bunch of big show in it. But you, my friend, stay well. Take care of that beard with your beard products.
I will. I'll do my best.
Where can people find those?
Oh, yes, of course. It's at it is thehighstreetbeardoil.ca. You're never going to have a better product done. We've got fertilizers. We've got jellies. We've got oils. We've got soaps. We've got everything that you need for your beard. It is fantastic stuff. I stake my reputation on it.
I mean, in this time of COVID-19, when many of us are not shaving because we have no need to leave our homes, take care of your beard, friends. Go order them online. All right, Dave. Well, listen, I hope to be hearing from you again soon. Come on back and stay safe, stay isolated.
Thank you. You too, sir.
Are you going to say hooray?
Hooray!
There we go. We're wrapping up when we come back. Dave Meltzer is on the other side of the break. You're listening to Sunday Night's Main Event on TSN Radio. Thanks for listening to Sunday Night's Main Event. Just a reminder that this month, all of our Patreon funds are going to help the CanadaHelps.org Community Relief Fund. Patreon.com/SNMEradio is where you can go to sign up for our podcast. It's only $4 for the entire month, but just know this month, that money is going to help people that have been hit hard by the COVID-19 pandemic. Patreon.com/SNMEradio. All you do is sign up for the podcast and bam, you've made a donation. Patreon.com/SNMEradio.
Well, it's a big show. Oh, it's a big bad show tonight.
Welcome back to Sunday Night's Main Event. You hear the music and you saw him on Monday, as a bit of a surprise, facing off against Drew McIntyre on Raw, which actually supposedly happened after WrestleMania on Sunday night. What a weird way to bring the Big Show back, also in a heel capacity. Anyhow, Paul White, the Big Show. We're not going to talk all that much wrestling here. Instead, we're going to talk the world of entertainment. I had the chance to chat with him on Monday during the day. So, unfortunately, I had no idea, nor did he smarten me up to the fact that he was in attendance at WrestleMania, and he did this thing with Drew McIntyre afterwards, and I was given this interview. I believe one of the reasons that they organized it on Monday was so I couldn't dive into whatever this angle was, and I was kept in the dark. But nonetheless, I organized this interview because I wanted to talk about The Big Show Show, which is a fun sitcom on Netflix, very much in the spirit of Full House and Family Matters. And there is the link over with Jaleel White, who played Steve Urkel on Family Matters, appearing in the show as well. Big Show is someone that I've always thought would transfer over very well to a comedic role, and the show itself is pretty fun. I mean, as something, while we're all in COVID-19, you want to sit back and watch with your family, pretty solid. We're going to be breaking these episodes down a little bit more. Myself and Mark Andrada will review the series because we're in the midst of a pandemic and want to do something silly. We'll do those on Tuesdays on our podcast, so you can find that at patreon.com/SNMEradio. It's going to get real ridiculous. So here, though, is my interview. Paul White, The Big Show, chatting with myself. Sorry about his phone quality. It's horrendous. But what can you do when you set up with an interview? So a bit of that conversation right here on Sunday Night's Main Event. Well, first, I kind of want to kick in and start chatting about you. I mean, we're in a very weird world right now with COVID-19 everywhere. How are you doing? You staying isolated?
Yeah, I mean, I've been a giant my whole life, so social distancing is something I think I just practice naturally because I don't fit in everywhere else with everybody, you know?
Yeah, and perhaps not a bad time to be launching a sitcom considering people are doing a lot of binge-watching right now.
Well, yeah, you know, it is, on one hand, it's very lucky that people will have the time to watch it right now. Just especially our show, we have a lot of good family and a lot of love on this show, so hopefully it'll ease some of the tension of the social distancing and the staying at home to help, you know, keep this disease quelled as best as we can. You know, if it gives some comfort, then it's a win-win all the way around.
For sure.
You know, it's just it's definitely trying times, but, you know, you can try to do the best you can and just be kind and hold on, you know?
Well, listen, Paul, let's talk about the series. I mean, looking at you and your career, from your comedic pairing with Kane back in the day to all of your various gimmicks as the Showster, to me, you've always been someone who played very well comedically. Was this type of sitcom something you always wanted to do?
Well, I wanted to do this type of a sitcom, the live audience comedy sitcom, like since we did Saturday Night Live with The Rock.
Oh, you know, yeah,
when The Rock
you were
had
great.
Us on there. It was Mick Foley and Triple H and all of us, and I started driving Vince nuts shortly after that. I mean, anytime we had any downtime, or I was always trying to suggest things for my character to be funnier, to be more entertaining, and Vince let me have a little bit of a run with it here and there, but let's face it, my Big Show character, I did my best work being a heel, being a monster, and getting other guys over it. Being a Goliath to all the Davids that we created, from the John Cena's to the Roman Reigns and so forth. So to step away from that WWE competition in the ring, get a chance to really embrace the funnier side of me, the more compassionate side, the dad side, is a new experience for our fans. And I think it has a lot of authenticity, because it's pretty much the Big Show character and TV show is kind of me. I am a bit silly. I'm a bit goofy. You know, I play Dungeons and Dragons with my friends online. Like, I read books all the time. So I am kind of a nerdy, fun person to be around. I'm not the big monster that I was for years in WWE.
So you're doing the sitcom now. It's not your first time on screen. I mean, you've done movies before. In particular, in 2009, you got the chance to do Knucklehead. How is this experience different than doing Knucklehead?
Well, it's a little bit different in the amount of work that's done. I mean, Knucklehead was one script. You know, there were a few scenes shot each day. There was plenty of time to prepare for each scene. Doing this live family comedy multicam, and Kadeem Hardison is a real good friend of mine, and you remember, you know, in the past, Different World and stuff like that. He's an experienced
actor. Dwayne Wayne.
He says, he says, oh man, you'll go in at like 10 o'clock. You'll sit on your feet. You should be out by 2:30 or 3. I'm thinking, oh wow, okay. So I stepped my bicycle out to LA. I was going to do all this biking out by the ocean and ride my bike in Malibu. I had all these grand plans of seeing California. Man, I went at 7:30 in the morning to 7:30 at night, and 9 o'clock in the morning on Fridays to midnight. First one there, last one to leave. There's a new script on Monday, new script on Tuesday, new script on Wednesday. Try to get everything ready Thursday, and then live audience Friday. So the amount of workload for me, being new at this. Now, some of your pros, it does get easier the more you do it. It's like training a muscle. You know, the first couple of weeks, I think I was a bit overwhelmed, like, oh my God, what am I doing? But as it went on, and I learned from the other actors, and I had some great directors from, you know, Melissa Joan Hart and Bob Kohler and all these amazing directors that I got to experience a little bit from each and every one of them, made the process a lot better, a lot easier. I think by the time that we finished our last episode, it was a much smoother process for me, much smoother on studying, preparation, and also understanding my character and bringing the most out of it. So.
Now, you know, you mentioned you did this to a live audience, which is very interesting for a current sitcom to be doing that. But I would guess that you, with all of your experience as a professional wrestler, working to a live audience would actually lend yourself very well to that environment, as opposed to film actors who would have to make the transition.
So much easier, Jason. That's a great point, too, because that live audience, I could still feel that buzz of the crowd and feel that energy level on, but I had to learn it because it's a different timing than wrestling. Like wrestling, you get the ebb and flow of the crowd. It's like a liquid or an energy that you can feel, and you can feel how to manipulate it. I had to learn those feats in the family comedy, because some jokes that I would read on paper, read the script, and, oh, wow, they're really going to laugh here. but they didn't laugh in the read in front of the audience, but they laughed in different places that I didn't expect them to laugh. So I had to learn that timing of when to carry my jokes through and to pause and to wait and things like that. And it's a timing thing. You know, one of my shows that I've actually studied, and it's crazy, that I studied to prepare for this, of all things, was The Golden Girls. Probably one of the greatest written shows of how great writing and great actors that work together, those ladies would pass one joke around four or five times. You know, just the volley on the joke in front of that, you know, and then to have that live audience to work in, that magic, you get that instant gratification. When we're done with the live audience after filming an episode, I know that episode was good because of the reaction of the crowd. When you're doing a movie and it's just on a set, and you there's such a nightmare wait to find out if anybody's going to respond to it the way you think they will. So there's a little bit more instant gratification with a multicam, which is like performing in WWE and having that relationship with a live audience. Is completely different from film.
Okay, well, let's continue on. You know, you mentioned the relationship with the audience, and that actually brings me into another thing I wanted to talk about. We're fresh off a very interesting WrestleMania last night that took place with no audience. Did you get a chance to watch it, and what did you think?
I thought it was amazing. I thought it was an incredible WrestleMania as far as the way they were able to protect our talent, the screening process, because I get the emails and the updates from our medical staff on what's going to be required if you are selected to compete, if you're asked to compete, and if you want to compete. And then the show that they delivered was so creative, so out of the box, and so mesmerizing, because you've got athletes that are used to beating, like we talked about before, off that emotion and off in that crowd for timing, for sense of passion, for sense of feel. The audience has such an influence. But to see our talent all the way through react as if that place was sold out in front of 90,000 or 100,000 people, to their timing, their execution, and their commitment to the craft was ridiculous. And then on the production side of it, you know, I mean, everybody's talked about, you know, the Firefly Funhouse and the Boneyard match with Undertaker. It was an incredible match, too, with Charlotte Flair and Rhea Ripley. You know, it was just off the charts. And Randy Orton and Edge, same thing. You know, like, they told stories. And that's, for me, being an old-timer wrestler, it's not about moves for me. It's about telling stories. And the fact that there were so many stories that were told in unique ways as WrestleMania is a huge win for WWE, and it's a huge win for our audience, because no one knew what to expect. I mean, this came out of nowhere. You know, this is a time event that we wait all year to tie up a lot of loose ends, to finish a lot of angles. It's your chance to really showcase as a talent, and to have all that in jeopardy and change and kind of move with the flow. The product that we got the past 2 days with that WrestleMania too big for one night, I thought it was incredible. Everybody deserves a big round of applause, and thank you for that one. It worked, and I know the fans enjoyed it. I saw the responses on social media, so I know the fans loved it too. So everybody wins on that one.
You mentioned the Firefly Funhouse and the Undertaker match. Looking at something like the Undertaker match, where Taker was put into a situation that made him look like the incredible character that he has been for the past 30 years, and also was done in a manner that's a lot safer than being in the ring, because you can do multiple takes and your stunts can be a little bit more protected. Is that something that you'd be interested in doing? You know, considering you've been doing this for a long time, Paul, your body has taken a beating, and I'm wondering if this is appealing to you.
You know, I'm willing to adapt with the industry however it changes. I mean, at the core root, I'm an entertainer and I'm also an athlete, so I'm always going to be attracted to, you know, our product at WWE. But whatever changes come down the road, whether this is something that we expand on further, I'm definitely in 110%. I'm also in for whatever needs to be done in the ring as well. I'm not the 23 or 24-year-old kid that I was, you know, years ago, so I won't be bumping and flying or wrestling five nights a week for week after week after week straight. But I'm trying to pick my spot, so to speak, come in, help some of the younger guys develop, help some established guys have some fun, interact with my fans. Hopefully we can do that as soon as this virus gets quelled. Because I know me as an entertainer, that relationship with the audience is so very important. You listen to that. And being able to do that and perform for them and get that symbiotic relationship is something that we live for. So let's be honest, most of us would do this for free anyway just because we love doing it. But, you know, luckily I can pay the bills with it, so I'm happy.
You know, in the series, The Big Show Show, you play a retired professional wrestler. And that was one of the questions that I was going to ask you that, you know, you've said you're interested in coming back. So it's not over for The Big Show, is what you're telling me here. How often?
No, it's not over by a long shot. No, not at all.
Who are you interested in coming back and working with?
There's a lot of guys that I want to work with. There's a lot of talent that I think I can help. Not necessarily work with on TV or in a big protracted angle, but I would like to interact with them independently on some overseas tours, some less televised stuff, just for mechanics and timing, and give some of our guys that are new, that are going to be bigger heels, for them to understand how to work as a big guy, as a bad guy, how to sell as a big guy. And a lot of times that experience is best done working with them in the ring. You can tell somebody backstage how to do it. They can watch videos. But until you're in the ring with them, then they understand the feeling and how to grasp that feeling and when to execute and how to make the most out of things. So for me, I love doing that. So that is a role that I think I'll always be able to play here. I've worked very hard to earn the respect of the guys in the locker room and the people that I work for. So we're all on the same page on that one. I mean, but I got to be judicious, too, on how much I work, too. I mean, you know, mentally, I might want to work 4 or 5 nights a week, but physically, you know, I've got a hip replacement. And, you know, it's best to do it once in a while, you know. So on the other time, we find something else that gives us the same fulfillment and the same pressures as far as wanting to entertain and wanting to succeed and being prepared. So the you know, our Big Show Show with Netflix has been that transition from sports entertainment and the pressures and the successes there to come over here and be a partner with Netflix and do the show. It's been mentally, it's been amazing for me.
Well, that's a perfect way to end this interview off. Paul, listen, thank you so much for joining me tonight. I really appreciate it. Best
thank
of luck.
Thank you very much, Jason.
I hope to see a season 2
thank
coming.
You. Me too, man. Fingers crossed. I hope so, and I hope this COVID-19 goes away real fast.
Yeah. Well, stay safe and stay inside, my friend. My thanks to Paul White, The Big Show, for taking that time out to join me. And that whole interview, which runs just over 20 minutes, is going to be available this week. I'll put it up uncut, unedited on our Patreon. It's where you get all the extra stuff from this show. So by all means, sign up, patreon.com/SNMEradio. And this month, as I have said, we're donating all of our proceeds to the CanadaHelps.org Community Relief Fund. So if you've ever thought about being a patron, sign up now. I'm going to make the donation this week because right now the donations are doubled. And I don't want to lose out on doubling our impact when we donate to this fund. So just know, money's not even going to me, guys. It is going to people who need it much more right now during the coronavirus pandemic. So sign up, patreon.com/SNMEradio. Not only are you going to get uncut, unedited interviews, you also get the trivia show, the All Elite Weekly show, myself and Mark Andrada doing the midweek markout, whole bunch of good stuff there, and yes, the second hour of this show. And all of the stuff is commercial free. So no commercials in between anything. If you're listening on the radio right now, you're getting a lot of commercials. Cut those out. Listen on demand and donate to a good cause. Patreon.com/SNMEradio. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Wrap things up with your feedback. That's what we're doing. It's Sunday night's main event right here on TSN Radio. And if you threw-